This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
My worst fear is actually losing a home and the people that I love because of the floods. So I'm imagining waking up one day and I'm finding it just carrying us and there is no way out because everywhere is flooded.
That's a Nairobi resident Placidis Achungo saying flooding that has devastated parts of East Africa is feeding fears and nightmares. Details coming up. Also, there is voting in Togo today. And the African Union is deeply concerned about escalating tensions in a disputed area of northern Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Heavy rains continue to pound a large portion of East Africa, causing death and devastation. In Kenya and Tanzania, at least 240 people have died in floods in recent days, and tens of thousands have been displaced. On Monday, police said at least 40 people died when a dam burst in western Kenya. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Kenyan police say a dam collapsed early Monday, sending a wall of water through houses and cutting off a major road in the Mai Mahiu area of the Great Rift Valley region. Heavy rains have been pounding the country since mid-March, and the meteorology department has warned of more to come. Munir Ahmed is a senior communications officer at Kenya Red Cross Society.
Since the wake of the March to May rainfalls, we have had over 30,000 households affected in 31 counties. We've had over 14,000 households displaced as well in various parts of the country. Some of the major areas that have been affected as a result of the persistent rains are Nairobi, Tana River, Garissa, Kisumu.
Ahmed says the number of people affected by the deadly floods has risen to more than 100,000. In Kenya's capital, Nairobi, dozens of families have sought refuge in makeshift camps, in churches and schools. City resident Placidis Achungo says little help has come so far.
My worst fear is actually losing a home and the people that I love because of the floods. Remember, this water level was coming in and it would seep inside, like through the doors, any opening it would find. And this water has like a lot of strength. I could see it carrying stuff. So I'm imagining waking up one day and I'm finding it just carrying us and there is no way out because everywhere is flooded.
She says the inadequate drainage system in our area is blocked and can't handle the heavy rains. City residents have also expressed concern of possible outbreaks of malaria and other waterborne diseases. The heavy rains have also resulted in loss of livelihoods, killing livestock and crops, and destroying roads and bridges. Peter Ondieki is a shoe shiner on the streets of Nairobi.
When it is raining, no customers are coming to our business area. When we look at our neighboring county, Machakos and Kiambu, we see how things are. This one is so shameful. Men, Kenyans are dying.
Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua says the government is stepping up support efforts.
Make sure that we help in unblocking the drainages, and where roads have been broken, they can be restored so that people are able to go about their work. We'll be able to put some resources to the public health state department to make sure that we don't have disease outbreaks, to make sure that issues of cholera and malaria are contained.
The government has suspended the reopening of schools. The second term, which was scheduled to begin Monday, will now resume on May the 6th. The heavier than usual rains in Kenya and Tanzania are being fueled by the El Nino weather pattern, which brings wetter conditions to the region. In Tanzania, authorities report tens of thousands of people have been displaced by floods and landslides. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Also in Kenya, 5 people were killed today in a bomb attack near the border with Somalia. According to the Interior Ministry, the bomb exploded in Elwak town in Mandera County and wounded 5 other people. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the area has had other attacks carried out by Somalia-based Al-Shabaab militants affiliated with Al-Qaeda. The Interior Ministry said the bomb had been placed on a donkey cart to avoid detection.
They're in our phones, our electric cars, our satellites, and even our refrigerators. Semiconductors, invented in the United States. But now only about 12% of chips are made in America.
American manufacturing is back.
Through his CHIPS and Science Act, President Joe Biden campaigned this week with $6 billion in federal grants for Micron's new plants in New York and Idaho. Added to Micron's own $125 billion, Biden says it's the biggest private investment ever in the two states.
Folks, my predecessor and his MAGA Republican friends have a very different view. They oppose the CHIPS and Science Act that's powering this growth today. We got to stop this division. I promise to be president for all of America, whether you voted for me or not. Today's investment helps Americans everywhere.
During his presidential term, Donald Trump had Intel's then CEO announce the company's $7 billion chip project from the Oval Office.
Thank you, Mr. President, for this.
But there was no government money backing the project. Subsidizing semiconductor companies is a fairly new policy, and experts say it's where the two presidential candidates differ. James Lewis has been studying semiconductors and national security for 25 years.
You know, in 2015, if you'd asked most Americans, if you'd asked the Obama administration, do we need a chips policy? They would have said, no, everything's fine. What are you worried about? So this has only been recently, and the Trump administration changed our views towards China. This administration, though, has been the one that's been able to actually carry out some useful plans.
Trump, as president, handled China's threat in a different way. He used tariffs.
We've taxed China on $300 billion worth of goods and products being sold into our country, and China eats it.
$50 billion of that was on high-tech items. More recently on the campaign trail, candidate Trump on what he would do in a second term.
I will revoke China's most favored nation's trade status.
Since it was introduced, Biden's CHIP and Science Act has triggered 83 projects to eventually increase the U.S. share of semiconductor manufacturing. Lewis says should Trump be reelected, he would need to implement a CHIPS and Science Act Part 2 to continue those efforts. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
And in elections in Africa, voting got underway in legislative elections in Togo today in the wake of constitutional reforms by the outgoing parliament that could extend the 19-year-old rule of President Faure Gnassingbé. The election is being held under a new charter adopted in March, which introduces a parliamentary system of government that will choose the president instead of universal suffrage. Reuters says that over 4 million people registered to vote to elect 113 lawmakers. They had 2,352 candidates to choose from. Provisional results are expected from tomorrow. Regional elections are also taking place. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The African Union has said it is deeply concerned about escalating tensions between local communities in a disputed area of northern Ethiopia and asked all parties to urgently halt hostilities. According to the United Nations, over 50,000 people have been displaced by clashes this month in Alamata town, Raya Alamata, Zata, and Ofla, part of a disputed area claimed by Tigray and neighboring Amhara. Amhara forces occupied Raya Alamata in southern Tigray during a two-year war between Ethiopia's government and regional Tigrayan authorities. In a statement Friday, AU Commission Chairman Musa Faki Mahamat called on both sides to urgently halt hostilities and ensure the safety of civilians to end the renewed displacement of the local population. Meanwhile, reports of the fighting, according to the French news agency AFP, have sparked alarm among the international community. The embassies of several nations, including the United States, Japan, Britain, and France, last week called for dialogue, urging de-escalation and protection of civilians. It is impossible to verify the situation on the ground independently, as media access to northern Ethiopia is heavily restricted. According to a 2023 Transparency International report, most African nations are showing stagnation or failing to make progress against corruption. Corruption is still a reality in many African countries, including Ghana. According to the country's Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, corruption accounts for about 20% of the national budget. Civil society groups are joining the fight, taking up the challenge to expose it and push everyone for action. Isaac Kaldizi has more from Accra.
These Ghanaian journalists are planning for their next big investigative story. They work for the Fourth Estate, an Accra-based non-profit public interest and accountability initiative by the Media Foundation for West Africa. The editor is Kofi Enchil.
We work with Ghanaians, we work with whistleblowers who give us information. And so we look at issues and we go deep into those issues. We bring them out in forms of, you know, publications, online, you know, write-ups and YouTube videos and all that, mainstream documentaries.
The publications focuses largely on anti-corruption related stories. Since launching in 2021, it has published several groundbreaking anti-graft stories. Among them was an exposé by the project on asset declaration following a requirement that government officials declare their assets. The Fourth Estate filed the case with Ghana's Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice that further investigated the matter.
So when we did that story, as many as 294 or so public officials hurriedly declared their assets. In fact, before the publication, they are not declared, but they were in office. But when we published the story, very quickly, they declared their assets. And we thought that that was impactful, and it sent the right message to authorities and to public officials.
Anti-corruption campaigners say fighting corruption in Ghana has become a daunting task, despite the country launching the National Anti-Corruption Action Plan, a policy document with plans to combat corruption. Mary Ada is the executive director of Ghana Integrity Initiative.
The National Anti-Corruption Action Plan was the blueprint for all of us to fight corruption. However, in all these very glowing attributes that I give, you would realize that there are so many gaps within the system that we haven't paid attention to. And for that matter, it makes the fight against corruption a difficult one.
Some of those gaps include weak laws that hinder the work of state institutions mandated to investigate and prosecute corrupt public officials. Civil society groups like the Center for Democratic Development, CDD, are filling the gap and taking on the challenge. In 2017, the organization launched the Corruption Watch Project in an attempt to reduce public corruption through advocacy for transparency. Kojo Pumpuni Asante is the director of advocacy and policy engagement.
We are able to do original investigations. We have actual investigative journalists as part of the team that do the investigation, but we also try to follow up on cases that are alive or cases that we feel have been buried and we forgotten that we think we need to revive.
The activism by the CDD team for the past 7 years appears to be yielding results.
We didn't want the issue of corruption to die and also to be episodic. You know, we just wanted to keep it on the minds of, you know, citizens that we need to keep fighting. We need to take an interest. You know, they need to join the fight because we're feeling that corruption was becoming normalized and people felt that, oh, well, that's how it is.
Thanks to the works of these civil society groups, the fight against corruption is on people's mind.
Both as anti-corruption and governance experts and think tanks, a lot of work has been done. We have shown evidence of research that corruption is an issue and it is hydra-headed. And to fight it, we need serious commitment.
Isaac Kalaji, VOA News, Accra.
The world recently marked Earth Day with the theme of planet versus plastics. Why? It's because the issue of plastic pollution is a serious environmental problem around the world. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with Sheila Agrawal-Kahan, Director of the Industry and Economy Division at the United Nations Environment Program, about plastic pollution in Africa and the world and some of the problems it causes.
As you know, Africa actually produces some of the least volumes of plastic. Something like 5% of plastic is actually produced there. And in fact, consumption is also very low, about 16 kilos per person, compared to a global average of 45. And in some of the high plastic consumption countries, as high as 136 kilos per person. So Africa, in terms of production and consumption, is very low. Yet the immensity, you could say, of the problem is huge. And so you see from all across the value chain of plastics, you see chemicals and from plastics leaching out into the environment. And there's increasing studies showing that there's an exposure risk from the chemicals that are leaching out. And then there's, of course, a waste management issue, which is very evident in the rivers and oceans, where you see plastic pollution or plastic bags all over the place.
Why do you think plastic pollution has gotten so out of hand?
Well, I think the first thing is, of course, that most plastic is only recyclable in theory, right? I mean, you see a lot of plastic products where it has a nice recycle sign, but actually in reality, only 10% of plastic produced, even globally, is recycled. And that's because, on the one hand, there's mostly mechanical recycling facilities. In Africa, even less so. But the chemical recycling facilities are high cost, high environmental footprint, at least today, those technologies that exist. And so most plastic is not being recycled. A lot of plastic that we're seeing is now single use and short lived, especially in the packaging space, not enough reuse. And then, of course, even when it comes to recycling, there's a lot of worry about the chemicals that are in plastics and some of the problematic polymers. So you end up with a situation where there's not enough reuse and there's not enough waste management and recycling. And so unless you look at design issues right from upstream, you're not going to be able to solve the problem. And so Africa is in a situation where it's receiving a lot of plastic and doesn't know how to cope with the scale of the growth in plastic production that is ending up not just as waste, but across the life cycle has its own set of environmental and human health exposure issues.
And finally, the fourth session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee to develop an international legally binding instrument on plastic pollution, including in the marine environment, is taking place until April 29th in Ottawa, Canada. Can you tell us what is hoped to be accomplished at this meeting and how will it address the issue of plastic pollution?
So member states negotiating the treaty right now are looking to seeing how do they deal with many different issues across the entire life cycle of plastics. So all the way from polymers of concern to chemicals in the plastics, and what do they do when they see a harmful situation and look at alternatives. So they need to put in place the thinking about how to deal with alternatives.
That was Sheila Agrawal-Kahan, the director of the Industry and Economy Division at the United Nations Environment Programme. The UNEP today wraps up several days of meeting in Ottawa, Canada, to negotiate a binding international treaty on plastic pollution. Burkina Faso has suspended more international news organizations for airing accusations of an army massacre of civilians. The French news agency AFP reports the country's communications regulator, CSC, added French newspaper Le Monde, British publication The Guardian, German broadcaster Deutsche Welle, and French broadcaster TV's Monde to the Voice of America and BBC, which were suspended Friday. Other news media banned in an order date Saturday were French regional newspaper West France, African website APA News, and the Swiss-based Agence Ecofin. And now time for sports. I have in studio with me our VOA sports analyst intern, Omolemo Kale, and he's here to fill us about the Champions League and Basketball Africa League action over the weekend. Welcome to African News Tonight, Omolemo.
It's good to be here.
So what were the results of the English Premier League over the weekend?
Yes, really exciting English Premier League this weekend, where Arsenal versus Tottenham was a very, very exciting game. Arsenal was able to beat Tottenham 3-2 just by the inch of their hairs, making them still first place. Manchester City versus Nottingham Forest. Manchester City got to beat them 2-0 in a very comfortable win, making them in the second place with 79 points. Liverpool versus West Ham. Unfortunately, Liverpool drew West Ham, and that making them 3-3, and they have 75 points for the English Premier League.
How many games left now, Omolemo? How many games left?
Yes, so Arsenal and Liverpool have 3 games left, and Manchester City have 4 games left.
And in the Basketball Africa League, Omolemo, what are the results for the Nile Conference?
Yes, very exciting. Nile Conference it was. Al Ahly Sporting Club, Egyptian team, won their games in the weekend, and that makes them first place, along with the other Al Ahly Sporting Club, Libya, second place. So those two teams will be going to the Kigali playoffs soon. And unfortunately, the City Oilers and the Bangui Sporting Club did not make it into the playoffs.
And over the weekend, tens of thousands of runners took part in the Madrid Marathon. It was actually Sunday, yesterday. Talk to us a little about what transpired.
Yes, indeed. Kenyan and Ethiopian athletes were the ones who shone in both men's and women's races. Meet Kutafa was closely followed by fellow Ethiopian Fikre Bekele and Kenyan runner Douglas Chebi, who came in third. Tafa won the race with 2 hours and 8 minutes and 58 seconds. The 2023 Nairobi City Marathon champion, Naomi Jebet, secured her first international marathon win in Madrid in the women's race. The runner was in the solo lead on the final stretch of her win as well, finishing with a time of 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 20 seconds, 44 seconds faster than Ethiopia's Bontu Bekele, who finished second. Fellow Ethiopian Keben Chala finished in third place.
That was VOA sports analyst intern Omolemo, filling us on Championship League, Basketball Africa League, and the Madrid Marathon. Thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.